Welcome to the podcast. This is actually the second of three intros I will do. I was going to do a monologue about our money and something that I found out, how some data is being misread. Going to do that monologue. Also suggest that if your job and much of it can be done by AI, you need to reevaluate a lot of things. I was going to do that and then move on to today's guest. That didn't happen because the monologue ran really long. Whether it was me being too verbose, just talking too much to get to my point, or there was a lot to get to for me to say as much as I possibly could to make myself as clear as I possibly could. The monologue ran long, so we'll get to that now, and there will be another episode that you'll see coming your way with a guest that will be delightful and enlightening to you. First up, teachers are embracing ChatGPT-powered grading. This is of no surprise. You're familiar with all the ChatGPT and the AI things that are becoming more pervasive and important in many people's worlds. A new tool called Writable, which uses ChatGPT to help grade student writing assignments, is being offered to teachers grades 3 through 12. Teachers use it to run student essays through it. Then they evaluate the AI-generated feedback and return it to students. We have a lot of teachers using the program who are very excited about it. So this reminds me to throw another thing at you, another vital reminder, which again, I have sympathy for people losing their jobs to technology and whatnot. And this is where I hope they can take some of my guidance, because I watched friends and colleagues lose their jobs. Dozens, hundreds, people that I don't know by the thousands, beginning in the mid-2000s, actually with the Great Recession in 2007 and 2008, when the great companies that run, I say that like the large companies that run media, many of whom were in massive debt, found it as an opportunity to save money, and they took the best advantage of technology, and there is now about a quarter, if not less, people in what I do than there was 15 years ago. So I hope people heed my advice as technology begins to approach and encroach on what they do. So you may have heard that people will use ChatGPT and the things like it to make their job more efficient, take out some of the more mundane parts of the more mundane, mindless, less creative parts of what they do. Or maybe they want to find some creativity there with some thought prompts or whatnot, but to take out some of the real busy work. So I will again remind you and ask you, look at what you do very carefully. Look at your tasks through the day from the moment you turn on work to whenever it is you turn off. Think, could an AI do this? And you don't have to stretch your imagination too far. I'm not asking you to think whether it will cook dinner or pick up your kids, but your specific tasks at work. Think, could some type of program, algorithm, could I type this into a program, ones which are advancing very quickly, and many companies and corporations want to get them in play because the most expensive part of business, human beings, and companies want to make money or mitigate losses. And to do that, as I just illustrated with radio, the fastest way to do that is get rid of humans. So look at your job. And if you see an inordinate amount of tasks in your day that an AI can do, I need you to start game planning. If not, do not be surprised when your job is eradicated. I don't know what the suggestion to you might be. I don't want to tell you to go back to school, but just be alert. How can you make yourself more valuable to what your line of work is? And maybe you can't. Maybe your line of work is just destined to go the route of someone running things through AI, and that will be that. In fact, that very much could be my line of work. There was talk when ChatGPT got real hot that you could type things into, like, the things I'm going to talk about on my show today. If I were, like, overseeing this Toledo radio station, this cluster of stations, I would type that in, and then the AI on-air DJ would spit those things back out on the radio. No person, it would just come from a program. If you can see things like that happening in your line of work, and it's a lot of them, you need to be prepared. You've got to get better. You've got to learn how to really use the AI and make it a tool in your tool belt, no different than any other form of communication, whether it's email or making your PowerPoints, you use Canva a lot, or whatever it is that you have found to make your job better, or what has made you better at your job, what has made you more efficient at your own job, you need to put AI stuff in your tool belt like that. If not, you're at serious risk. A lot of your colleagues might vanish, but maybe you're okay with that if you're left standing because you were the best at becoming the most efficient with the tools that are coming quickly. So again, I don't know what the suggestion is. What do you want to do with your life? Think of things that AI will not be able to do in the next 3, 5, 10 years and pursue that stuff. I'm going to go back to a podcast that I've not referenced for a while, but it is my favorite podcast. And I've talked about it more than enough times here on the show where I get a lot of my ideas from, In Plain English, by writer and much more, Derek Thompson. And he has endeavored this year to have more people on his podcast that want to tell him he's wrong. And I admire the heck out of that. And if I could find people to do that to me, first of all, there would probably be a very, very, very long list. A much shorter list if I could find those people who would do it in a intellectual kind of way, and we can have a discussion and I can sit here like you often hear me do when we have a really compelling guest and I just sit back and you don't hear me talk and maybe you can hear me thinking or going, Somebody like that, I would be happy to hear them so we can have a discussion instead of a yelling match on the internet. And I've gotten many of my thoughts about this horrific, painful, not horrific because overall it's really good, but the painful economy for many from Derek and others in the lot that he chats with. And his Twitter orbit has become my Twitter orbit. He has somebody on the show. I follow them. So yeah, there is a contagion effect. I like to think it's in the good way. And I pat myself on the back. I think I have been more right than wrong when it has come to the economy over the last 4+ years now, which is stunning because I have no economic background whatsoever. In fact, I was always terrible at math. And there's one thing I listened to in Derek's latest podcast, and it makes me go back to something I said. I looked at my tweets from like 2 years ago where I was like, stop, don't touch anything. Let it fix itself. You might have heard or come across a pretty important economic indicator. A statistic that the Fed, and like I said, we're going to be a little nerdy here, and I apologize for that, pretty granular, that the Fed and other financial institutions to decide whether or not interest rates up, interest rates down, how's the economy doing, blah, blah, blah. And there is, unfortunately, no one size fits all. As I've mentioned regularly, and Derek mentioned in his podcast, which it was pushed back on. Well, he learned from his guest, Judd Kramer, an economist at Harvard. People at the bottom of the economic food chain have made the most gains, but have they also had to deal with the highest cost increases? I would actually push back on that a little bit and say, not necessarily. I would think that might be the people in the middle class, middle, and then up, slightly upper middle, have dealt with the most pain because they probably got a smaller percentage raise than the people at the bottom. And they arguably buy similar type goods. Does that make sense? Maybe Derek will have me on a show. He likes some of my tweets and that makes my heart flutter so much. One day perhaps I will have the chutzpah. I would invite him on if I thought he would accept, but that's my moonshot. That's my big swing. So CPI, Consumer Price Index. I will read this straight off Wikipedia. The price of a weighted average market basket of consumer goods and services purchased by households. And as I've seen this often, I think it strips out like housing and energy. So based on this, we have seen like the economy improving, even though it's been so painful for people. A quick aside, you might have seen a post I put up about someone irate that it cost them $25 at Five Guys. I can see this as a person just doing this to get some interest, just doing it to create some outrage. You do not need Five Guys. It's not even like a quick run at McDonald's where, like, I need something to eat. I haven't eaten all day. Let me run through McDonald's drive-thru. I would put Five Guys with more fast casual than fast food. So you do not need Five Guys. And if you do not absolutely need it, I don't want to hear you complaining about the cost of it. And the irony of the person posting it or going forward with it and buying it, paying for it, getting the receipt, and then crying so much about it. Again, just simply for attention. And you know what? That might work in small shockwaves to some size companies where they feel the internet outrage. And they're like, yeah, we need to make some changes. But in most cases, this is short-lived and not really going to do anything. There is one way, and again, I did nothing in economics, but I did pay attention to one thing I think we learned in middle school and high school, basics of economics, supply and demand. We have felt the seller side of that very painfully. Supply was all backed up, prices go up, and we had to pay them. But quite simply, if you would like to bring prices down, and I'm pretty sure this would work, instead of like 77,000 likes, you need 77,000 people to say, fuck you, Five Guys, I'm not paying that much. I will buy a bunch of burgers at Kroger, even though they're a little more pricey, make my own, and I will do a silent protest. I will quit eating out as much. Like, and you need to have conviction towards this. My one weak spot with this, I keep complaining about the cost of my transformers. They're up 25% across the board, if not more, in a very short period of time. I do feel that they have used these times to drastically increase their prices more than I believe that they are providing me with what I buy. But I can't say no. It's my hobby. It's my one weak spot. And I'm thankfully in a good financial situation. If you're in a struggling financial situation, you do not need to be buying and then complaining about the cost of Five Guys. All right, consumer price index. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that strips out housing and energy. So Derek's guest again, and I encourage you, it's pretty brainy stuff. Judd Kramer, Harvard University teacher, talks about why CPI is not a good measurement for people who guide the economy to get us in a better place.
Based off of theoretical reasons, the Bureau of Labor Statistics actually has taken housing prices out of the consumer price index since 1983. So now when we measure the costs of housing, we're actually just looking at rent prices. And we are saying for homeowners, how much money would you have gotten if you were to have rented out your house for the year? And so that's what we're using as the measure of house prices. And it has a few distortionary effects on the measure of the CPI. Most importantly for our discussion is that it used to include mortgage costs. So interest rates used to really enter into the CPI. And now mortgage costs are completely absent.
I see. So in 1981, if interest rates spiked, and they did spike in 1981, it would show up in shelter inflation. But today, when interest rates spike and people who buy new homes and have to pay that higher 30-year mortgage rate are paying much higher rates than they would have if they had bought a home in 2019, that isn't reflected in shelter inflation. Is that what you're saying?
Completely correct. Yes. Mortgage rates are not included at all. Neither are housing prices, which sort of strikes people as a little confusing because they know that housing plays such a large part in their own finances.
So there is very clearly another 30 minutes in this podcast, but my takeaway from it was, and there is a part in there where they talked about a survey asking if inflation is up and you pull interest rate down, and so much that should be predictable has not happened in the last 4 years. That's one tenet of mine that I've had since the outset of COVID. Just because it worked in similar situations before, like you've heard about stagflation and the terrible economy, the pricey economy of our parents in the 70s and early 80s, people waiting in line for gas and all those things. what we've experienced the last 4+ years has been like nothing in history. It's been similar, but there's been so many moving variables. It's hard to look back. And that's what you have to do. You've got to look at history and go, what did we do here? How can we make the best decision possible? But we made decisions with too narrow of a scope, comparing it too closely to those situations. So back then, to offset the skyrocketing inflation, Paul Volcker. He was the chair of the Fed, jacked up interest rates huge. Like if you look at a graph, it peaks. It's enormous in the late 70s, early 80s. And a lot of people feared that that was going to happen this time. To bring inflation down, you move interest rates up. But also, that also cost people their jobs. I'm pretty sure unemployment skyrocketed back then. And I said, sometime in the last 18 months, yeah, the inflation might come down as the interest rates go up, but it will be at the cost of people's jobs. And we have like historically low unemployment right now. I'll get to what people are being paid, and that's a part of this. Maybe we just couldn't corral so many different helpful statistics. We didn't have enough in the cauldron to figure our way out of this because, as you know, the current Fed, Jerome Powell, Fed chair, interest rates have gone up. And I'm sure I have like half of the people who normally listen to this are gone by now. In fact, I might have to split this up and I'll leave Isabella for another one. So interest rates have gone up. History says that should make inflation come down. Not as quickly as we would have wanted. So I had this thought that I said a couple of years ago when I was like, I hope the Fed holds steady and just doesn't raise interest rates. If they do, do it microscopically. Let people figure this out on their own because people began to see prices rising. And when prices go up, what do? You change your spending habits. Now, they also talked about in this podcast that we very well know that there was a lot of government money that came our way in the first 18 months of the pandemic. And as I had seen before, yes, it caused some pretty bad chaos, but had that money not have come out, the chaos likely would have been much worse. You might have had people scattered all over the streets, homeless, and I'm only being a bit hyperbolic with that. So when that money ran out, people started to get more credit cards and put them on that, and the interest rates rising, and people began to ask for more money. And you know this has been a siren song of mine. This is what a chorus of mine for weeks and months now. If you ask for more money, that's fine, but it's just going to get pushed right back on us. Now, I'm not saying you are wrong to ask for more, but just know that these companies are not so altruistic and going to give up profits and revenue, and it's going to get pushed back on us. Maybe not directly, but maybe three people or 30 people away from you who had asked for a raise, but you buy that product, and now that product is more than what you got in your raise. So that real wage, which according to a lot of places, it's gone up, but it's different for real wages is different for every person who is not in the upper class, which is mostly everybody else in America having trouble with high costs. So asking for more money, rightly so again, raised prices. Interest rates going up were supposed to bring inflation down faster. And I don't know if that happened. And I said repeatedly, I hope the Fed doesn't touch anything. Let people figure this out on their own. If they stop buying products, the price will come down to bring a lot of this full circle. The costs will come down. My $12 burger at Five Guys will come back down to $10. So the only thing that really happened here with interest rates going up like double, triple, quadruple to what they have been, especially in the free money decade, essentially, after the Great Recessions in the 10s, where interest rates, where banks were basically giving people money. This is how it was quite easy for many bright and not so bright people to start up operations when they had a good idea, because you were basically getting a loan dollar for dollar. If you took out 10 grand, you gave 10 grand back. It wasn't like in the 90s or early 2000s. You took out 10 grand and you might wind up paying back over the course of X amount of years, $15,000, $17,000. It was dollar for dollar. So when, even though an interest rate can go from like 2 to just 6 or 7, you can do the math and see what kind of a multiplier that is. So my takeaway from this whole conversation was listening to Derek and his guest. So you mean we raise interest rates? All we did was raise interest rates and make cars and homes cost more? That's really all that we did. And with that stuff going up in price, those are such enormous purchases for so many people. Yeah, we're still dealing with a heck of a lot of heartache, because if it's not cost of goods that's got you bending over in a hard way, it's a car costing $300 more a month or whatever it might be. Or that home that was, I bought my house for 78 grand. It probably would have been 90. I could have sold it for 140. I could have sold my home for 150 within the last 18 months. So the effect of raising interest rates just made so many things more expensive rather than doing what they should have done in history past, was pull down inflation. If there is any good news, as I have also said all along with this, is it's better to have a job so you can pay the high prices rather than to not have a job and not be able to afford almost anything. Like, let's pretend the 1980s happened and they really jacked up interest rates, like to the point where it was, where the Fed chair was going to go, we apologize, but the unemployment rate has to double or triple. It has to go from like 4 to 8 or 10. Imagine 1 in every 10 people being unemployed. It doesn't matter how much things cost or come down in cost when there's when you don't have a job. So that's, and I know I am not the shiny optimist, but I've said that, like, at least you asked for money, you got it, you have a job, you can pay for these increased costs, you have opportunity to get more hours elsewhere because there's still people hiring, as we have this historically low unemployment rate, always people looking to hire good employees. So there's a lot in this foggy cauldron of why we're in such a pretty lousy spot. And I don't want to say that I was wrong about a bunch of things. I was probably wrong to say never said the economy is good. I was like, well, the economy overall, broadly speaking, is good. The United States is having one of the best recoveries on earth for Western nations. But that doesn't really matter to people in the lower middle class, people in the lower class. Although I will tell you, you do not need to buy eggs. Thanks for dealing with all of this. I hope it wasn't too nerdy. I hope I got as much of this right as I possibly could. And I will pat myself on the back for being right, that raising interest rates as they did way more harm than any kind of help to the high costs. And they're not really going to come down anytime soon.